Pakistan wants to play a peaceful role. Pakistan wants to encourage the people of Afghanistan to come to a solution, to come together.
Pakistan's president speaks with VOA. It's Friday, April 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghan women concerned about Taliban. President Biden's climate race to zero. New air passenger technology. A soft robot that fights hard tasks. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Pakistan's President Arif Alvi sat down with VOA's Aisha Tanzim this week in Islamabad to discuss the impact on the region of the United States withdrawing its forces from Afghanistan and how Pakistan sees its future relationship with its Western neighbor.
Mr. President, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Let me start with the biggest story in the region these days, which is the U.S. announcement of withdrawal from Afghanistan. How do you see it impacting the region and more specifically Pakistan?
I think it is a very important announcement. I think this is the region has been looking forward to some settlement, and the Doha talks came to a culmination with an agreement on withdrawal of U.S. forces. I think that's the right direction to go, and I am sure that that this withdrawal also relates to the fact that there should be an agreement between the Taliban and the government of Afghanistan for what is going to happen in the future. Because we want stability. The people of Afghanistan want for stability. Leave aside what Pakistan wants. Pakistan wants stability on its borders, because any instability or any insurrection of any sort is going to hurt us. It has always done so. So therefore, we are looking forward to a very stable and peaceful Afghanistan, and a lot of nitty-gritties have to be handled and settled. But I believe the future government of Afghanistan would be a peaceful government.
You mentioned the second part of the agreement, which should be the intra-Afghan negotiations between Taliban and the Afghan government and other Afghan factions. They don't seem to be going very well, though.
I think that is very important. Therefore, the efforts of the government of the United States, the efforts of Pakistan, the efforts of China, which is bordering Afghanistan, to the effort of Russia and the effort of Iran. All these countries are important in trying to stabilize, in trying to, even Iran, in trying to come encourage an agreement between the people of Afghanistan and the government of Afghanistan and the Taliban.
You mentioned a lot of countries. All of them have stakes. Some people say Pakistan has the biggest influence in this situation, since now it's a known fact the leadership of Taliban live in Pakistan, their families are here, their businesses are here. Why isn't Pakistan playing more of a role, not using more of its influence to encourage Taliban?
Pakistan has been using its influence.
Okay. President Biden mentioned in his speech that countries in the region need to do more, and the U.S. will ask them to do more. What is it that the U.S. is asking Pakistan to do?
I'm not aware of what the U.S. specifically wants Pakistan to do. Pakistan's effort towards peace does not depend on what the U.S. asks Pakistan. Pakistan's efforts for peace are indigenous in their nature and in their motivation. We want peace in Afghanistan. We all have to do more, including the Afghan, including the U.S., including Pakistan. All countries have to do more.
President Biden said one more thing. He said the U.S. will reorganize its counterterrorism capabilities to not take its eye off the ball and do counterterrorism from over the horizon. Now, he's obviously talking about drone strikes and air strikes that U.S. has used in the past. And Pakistan used to at one time provide bases to U.S. Have the U.S. asked for something similar in future?
I'm not aware, and I don't think Pakistan will be in a position to offer, but it's a hypothetical question.
Has the U.S. asked for any additional intelligence presence in Pakistan or any larger footprint post-withdrawal?
I'm not aware of that, and I don't think the U.S. needs any increase in intelligence presence or a bigger footprint in Pakistan. I think we should be careful in ensuring the fact that Pakistan doesn't become a base of U.S. Action in Afghanistan of any sort. Pakistan wants to play a peaceful role. Pakistan wants to encourage the people of Afghanistan to come to a solution, to come together.
Stay with VOA Asia. In a moment, we'll hear more from Pakistan's president and his perspective of relations with India. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. India's hospitals buckle under second pandemic wave. Australia ends China deals on national interest grounds. Malaysia issues world's first sovereign sukuk to fund sustainability projects. Biden administration seeking $300 million in aid to Afghanistan. U.S. Olympian slams call for China Winter Games boycott. These stories and much more can be found online with expanded coverage, videos and photos on Facebook at VOA Asia and voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. VOA Asia continues with Aisha Tanzim's conversation with Pakistan's President Arif Alvi. They explore complex relations with other nations in the region and whether it is dangerous to put forward a resolution in Parliament to expel the French ambassador from the country over French support for publication of caricatures of Islam's Prophet Muhammad.
What is that role that you talk about that Pakistan sees itself playing in Afghanistan post this withdrawal?
Oh, very important. This is the biggest important, the biggest role which we foresee is rebuilding of Afghanistan. Pakistan is in the best position to rebuild Afghanistan. We harbored more than 3.5 million refugees. It's a remarkable number.
What if these intra-Afghan negotiations fail?
Pakistan would not like the talks to fail. Pakistan believes that there are good chances for the talks to be successful. Although, let me make a comment right here. We believe that India has played a negative role. It has never accepted the Doha talks. It has never encouraged the Doha talks. So therefore, I believe that role will continue in the same manner. That is what our suspicion is.
Your Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi recently said at a press conference with the Russian Foreign Minister, he said Russia can help India play a positive role in Afghanistan. So has Pakistan come to an understanding with Russia? How can Russia help India play a positive
Whoever role? Whoever is in discussion with India, whichever country, can encourage India to not remain negative.
Let me ask you about another neighbor, Iran, which President Biden didn't mention, but you did. What do you see Iran's role, and is Pakistan in talks with Iran, because both are neighbors with long porous borders with Afghanistan, to somehow coordinate facilitation of the peace process?
Pakistan has always been in good relationship with Iran. There's in Afghanistan there are it's a mixed population of Shias and Sunnis, just like in Pakistan. Therefore, people look towards leadership from in the broader context. So I think Iran will always have a role in Afghanistan, and Iran has played a peaceful role.
Your government right now is doing backdoor negotiations with India. How are those negotiations?
There are no backdoor negotiations with India.
But the UAE ambassador to Washington said he's facilitating backdoor negotiations between India and Pakistan.
He mentioned the fact there may have been some consultations to arrive at a ceasefire on our borders.
And that was it?
I presume.
Under pressure from an Islamist party, the government's presenting a resolution in Parliament to expel the French ambassador from Pakistan.
I think the international ramifications of the issue are because of Islamophobia. I think we suffer from things which are said abroad and which are done abroad. Anything you say questioning the Holocaust is illegal in Europe. So therefore, we want the same kind of treatment. Now, what we have to do, we have to reflect what our people think. So our people are very hurt.
So is that
and
yes?
That message should go across, the people get hurt. So therefore, the Parliament is the best place to do a discussion.
So if the Parliament approves the resolution, Pakistan will throw out the French ambassador?
I'm not making any comment on that because the debate will be going on, and let the Parliament either approve or disapprove a resolution.
Isn't it a very dangerous move, though, because given the situation in Pakistan and the emotions of the people, we know that people have been killed over issues of perceived blasphemy in the past. Which parliamentarian would dare to oppose this resolution even if they wanted to? So, on one hand, isn't government putting the lives of parliamentarians at risk? And the flip side of it is, if the motion is approved, it's risking its relationship with the world.
I think the parliament is free. I think the parliamentarians are bold. I don't fall into the presumption that the parliamentarians would be putting their lives at risk in discussing something which is essential to us.
Well, Mr. President, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Pakistan's President Arif Alvi speaking with VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Islamabad. Happening now in Asia, Indonesia's Navy has launched a search for a submarine that went missing Wednesday in the waters off Bali Island. The submarine was on a training mission and failed to make contact at a specified time. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today. Women's rights leaders in Afghanistan and human rights advocates are expressing concern the hard-fought gains of the past 20 years are under threat from a potentially resurgent Taliban when U.S. and coalition troops depart later this year. VOA senior correspondent Cindy Sain reports on the determination of many to defend those rights.
With all U.S. and coalition troops set to leave Afghanistan by September 11th, anxiety is high among women and girls who fear their hard-won gains and basic rights will be lost.
The concern that I have about the future of Afghanistan is that it is really not possible for women to go 20 years back. If the Taliban want to be part of the future of Afghanistan, they should participate in these meetings and make compromises.
Even now, the right to attend school, much less university, is not universal for girls and women throughout Afghanistan, particularly areas controlled by the Taliban. A few women have been involved in Afghanistan's peace process with the Taliban, but women leaders are demanding a greater role. Hasna Jalil, the Deputy Minister for Women's Affairs, says she will resist any attempt to roll back women's rights.
With any fragile political developments in the country, I can say there is potential resistance among women. Besides, there is no change within the women ministry, and we will continue to resist until the last minute of any shaky situation.
Fatima Jilani is a member of the Afghan government's negotiating team in the peace talks.
Now we, the people of Afghanistan, must unite, make good progress towards peace. This is not only the responsibility of the delegation of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, but it's also the responsibility of every Afghan, both the Taliban and us.
Human rights advocates agree that anxiety levels are high, with women being targeted in deadly attacks over the last 6 months. Patricia Gossman of Human Rights Watch says the U.S. and other countries still have leverage with funding.
The Afghan state at the moment is almost entirely dependent on foreign funding, and a lot of that, or the majority of that, comes from the U.S. So this means paying government salaries, it means for a lot of the programs that are run, for the schools, for everything.
Other experts agree and call on the international community to make clear to the Taliban that women's rights are non-negotiable.
It would be a missed opportunity for the international community to say to the Taliban that as long as you meet several security obligations that we have, such as not providing safe haven for international terrorists, things of that nature, we're good to go. And we have no other expectations from you.
Human rights experts agree that more women in Afghanistan's political process will mean greater security for the war-weary country. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. India set a new record in the COVID-19 pandemic Thursday, reporting 314,835 new daily cases as its second wave and similar surges elsewhere raised new fears about the ability of health services to cope. You'll find this and all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. This week, the Biden administration is promoting a plan to boost electric bus production, proposing $45 billion in spending to reduce American-made bus emissions to zero by 2030. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara tells us more.
There are more than 500,000 school and transit buses in the United States. Most of them run on diesel. The Biden administration wants to change that, allocating $45 billion for electric buses as part of the massive $2 trillion infrastructure bill.
We ought to be the single most significant suppliers of electric buses and vehicles in the world before it's over. Right now, we're running way behind China.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden took a virtual tour of a South Carolina company that makes electric buses and charging systems. Vice President Kamala Harris visited a school bus manufacturing plant Monday. Both underlined the goal that all American-made buses would be zero emission by 2030.
It will keep our nation competitive. It will build up our nation's communities. And it will put our nation back to work.
The White House says the plan will reduce carbon emissions to reach the target of the Paris Climate Accord that the U.S. rejoined in February after President Donald Trump withdrew in 2017. But it's criticized as too broad by Republicans who say an infrastructure bill should not include spending to tackle climate change.
The proposal that the administration has put forward spends more on electric vehicles than it does on roads and bridges and ports and waterways and airports combined.
The administration is trying to garner Republican support, partly by framing infrastructure investments in the context of competing with China. According to Global Infrastructure Hub, projected Chinese infrastructure investment from 2016 to 2040 is 5.1% of its GDP, while the U.S. is 1.5%.
It challenges that fundamental idea that American life is what it is, partly because America is in first place in so many of these aspects of our national life. Only America's not in first place in infrastructure. Like I said, we're in 13th.
Investing in clean energy and green infrastructure will also be a focus when Biden hosts world leaders in a virtual climate summit later this week.
The competitive rationale to building up the supply chains and the businesses here will partly be driven not only by ensuring that the rest of the world is doing its part, which is part of the equation, but that we're a leader in developing these new businesses so we can be economically competitive and lead the world in selling these technologies and remaining prosperous in this new energy paradigm that we're creating.
Biden's plan sets a total $174 billion to win the electric vehicle market, which includes funding for sale rebates and tax incentives and building a national network of 500,000 electric vehicle chargers by 2030. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, China has strongly condemned a bombing at a five-star hotel in southwest Pakistan that killed four people and wounded about a dozen others and appeared to target Chinese diplomats. So far, no Chinese diplomats have been reported as being among the victims. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, San Francisco's International Airport and United Airlines have become the first in the United States to test technology that enables domestic passengers to check in and board flights with minimal contact between travelers and agents. Those behind the trial say the technology could make traveling safer during the pandemic, as we hear from VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
Airline passengers taking part in a test to limit physical contact with agents must first link their driver's license to a facial scan.
So right now this is employed at check-in, bag drop, and boarding. We're hoping to be able to add the TSA checkpoint as a demonstration as well.
It's a way to reduce interaction between agents and travelers, she says.
Scan your driver's license, take a photo, and then off you go. And then any other touch point in your journey, we just take a quick photo. It verifies your identity, verifies that you have a boarding pass.
Some passengers who travel often support the initiative.
Well, I fly a great deal for business, you know, 150,000 miles a year. So I do this pretty regularly. So anything that saves me a little bit of hassle makes the whole process a lot more efficient.
It will be an awesome procedure if it goes through and makes life easy for everybody.
Customers who are participating in our SmartPath biometric boarding trial.
The technology developed by Switzerland-based CYTA already exists for international flights at other airports around the world, including Athens, Beijing, and Doha. But this is the first time it's being tried for U.S. domestic flights.
What we've been able to do now is look at how do we bring this to the domestic travelers, which represents 80% of the market in the United States.
The company says in addition to increasing safety during the pandemic, it can also potentially cut down on long airport lines.
There are definite benefits to the technology. It certainly seems more convenient, certainly less human interaction.
But Justin Brookman, Director of Technology Policy at Consumer Reports, says there are also concerns.
One, I think, is around security and data breach. We've all seen, you know, tons of stories around databases being hacked. And the problem is if a biometric database gets hacked, you can't exactly get a new face or a new fingerprint. There have definitely been instances of biometrics being spoofed, fingerprints, many examples of people being able to do it relatively easily, but also facial recognition as well.
He also expressed the concern about the impact of biometric tracking on people's lives in the long term. Meanwhile, to address privacy concerns, the firm says passengers' information is stored locally at the airport and is automatically deleted after flights. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
A robot conceived to roll on planets is being used by firefighters in the United States to give them situational awareness before going into dangerous situations. It's called Squishy, and Michelle Quinn found out more.
It looks like a toy that bounces. It's called Squishy, and was originally conceived of as a way to roll around on planets or the moon, sending back data of what it found. Now Squishy is being used by firefighters, companies, and the military to detect dangers on the ground before humans arrive.
And I figured if I could do that on the moon or Mars, I should be able to do that on planet Earth.
Squishy was inspired by the children's toy Squish. It's among a growing trend of so-called soft robots that are designed to bend and move when faced with unexpected real-life situations.
And so it can get between rocks, it can climb over great heights.
These soft robots can take on jobs that are dangerous for people, says Andra Kay, Managing Director of Silicon Valley Robotics.
One of the things that I do like about these companies is that they get very close to the problem space. They understand it. It is a people-centered solution.
Dropped from as high as 1,000 feet, Squishy hits the ground, collapses, then rights itself again without hurting its central node, which contains cameras and sensors that detect gas, chemical, and fire hazards, letting first responders know of potential dangers. Squishy moves by a remote control to figure out the situation.
We would do what's a heat map. So you see where there's a higher concentration of that chemical gas. And that would tell you where the source is or the direction it's coming from.
It's a soft robot dropped into hard situations and reporting back on what it finds. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Berkeley, California.
That's our program for today and for the week. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. You may continue to follow us online. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank our VOA Asia team, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.